Hey, here's the first episode of my podcast, Scott Capurro Probes, with the fantastic guest, Andrew Doyle. When we recorded this podcast in the summer, I think July, the show is still titled Scott Capurro Stand Up Sit Down, or Stand Up Sit Down with Scott Capurro. Anyway, our title had been robbed by another comedian who's using it more effectively than me. We had to retitle the show, so the title you're hearing me mention is not currently the title. Anyway, enjoy this. And, you know, if you're not laughing, you're learning. Take care. Welcome to Stand Up, Sit Down, a podcast that speaks to artists, comedians, politicians, writers, and asks them to not just let us know their favorite works, but also what inspired their own work. My name's Scott Capurro. I've always enjoyed learning about a performer's journey. I think comedy is much funnier the more you know about the comedian's personal experience. And I wondered, when thinking about a podcast, might that apply to other people who create, who write, who perform publicly, and who infiltrate our own lives? If we know more about who they are, does that make the work more interesting? Anyway, in the first of my podcasts, I've invited the current comedy sensation, Andrew Doyle, writer, comedian, impresario, and impersonator. As a stand-up comedian, Andrew has appeared in solo shows at the Edinburgh Fringe on and off since 2008. Is that right?
About that, yeah.
He's also written for the hugely successful online newsreader parody, Jonathan Pye, which has become not just an internet sensation, but a live touring menage, and with whom Andrew has also appeared live. But Andrew's recent book, penned on his own under the name Titania McGrath, who's a millennial icon and online activist, self-described as, quote, a white woman of color, born into a heteronormative, patriarchal, white supremacist world. Titania is also a newborn vegan, forced to be breastfed, and currently lives a pampered life in Kensington, surrounded by a staff with whom she grasps the meaning of minority existence, and on paper systematically ridicules every sacred cow. Titania is a satire of the current political and social phenomenon known as woke, a black community word kidnapped by hipsters and used to describe what they deem the proper use of current, mostly social affairs. Under the same title, Woke, the book has been embraced by all sorts of free thinkers, including but not limited to Piers Morgan, Ann Coulter, Tucker Carlson, and everyone under the age of 35, who, coincidentally, is the age group at which the book most pokes fun, proving hopefully that young people do have a sense of humor despite claims from wine critic Roger Scruton, another Spectator columnist, which is a publication editor writes for. Andrew, welcome.
Hello, nice to be here.
Is any of that inaccurate? Do you want to correct any of it?
I don't think. No, it's pretty broadly right.
It's interesting that you chose Titania as your kind of camouflage to write about on Twitter.
Yeah.
You already had a Twitter account under your own name that you wrote for.
Yes.
But you chose a white woman to hide behind. Why did you choose that?
I think it had to be, right? I think exactly what you said is right about the word woke being hijacked by hipsters, right? Because it used to be something very different, and it was to do with racial equality. But so it's mostly the woke movement, as it appears to me, and certainly the most prominent elements of the woke movement, are these sort of young, white, you know, people who are basically very patronizingly saying that they're going to stand up for minorities, but they're... It's very bourgeois, you know, they're so privileged. So she had to be white. And also, I wanted to make fun of fourth wave feminism, the current brand of feminism. Uh-huh. And so therefore...
Fourth wave?
Yeah, I think...
is that the one where no one's... you're all meant to have a seat at the table, but you all don't?
Fourth wave is the kind of intersectional feminism. It's the thing where they say...
Do you make words up?
It sounds like it, doesn't it? No, that's real. I do actually make words up.
But sometimes, in the book, well,
sometimes with her, she makes words up because they do as well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, for a while, they made up this word fascist adjacent. You know, if you'd ever appeared or spoken to someone who was basically a conservative, you become fascist adjacent. So she sometimes talks about being proxy fascist adjacent. That's if you've ever met someone who's ever met someone who has right wing views. So, you know, it's great fun. You can make all this stuff up. Yeah. But yeah, intersectional is a real thing. It was started by Kimberly Crenshaw, who's this legal scholar and activist. And this is many years ago, and she was talking about, in America, the idea that sometimes black women fall through the cracks because You know, like the example she gave was General Motors. There was a case against General Motors, right, where they were being sued for being prejudiced against their black female employees, right? But their defense,
which is possible,
and it was true. Okay. But their defense was, but we've got loads of black men working for us and loads of white women, so that means we're not racist or sexist. But of course, the black women were getting hit from two directions. That's they were at the intersection of oppression.
Oh,
so
see.
Actually, Kimberly Crenshaw had a really good point. And it was totally valid to bring this up. But this was a long time ago. And now what's happened is those sort of things don't happen now. But what's happened is that analogy of intersectional ideas has become a cult, has become like a sort of way of thinking where you put everyone in a kind of grievance hierarchy, work out, it's like a competition. Who's the most oppressed? Who has the most victimhood?
But it's dangerous, isn't it, for an educated white man to tell people who are the most oppressed and the not the most.
No, because I don't think it's dangerous at all. I think we have to get back to the idea that ideas transcend individual demographics, right? I can recognize and say I don't have the experience of a black lesbian because I don't. But to suggest that I can't discuss ideas that pertain to a black lesbian is really limited.
But then why to Tanya McGrath? Why a character to discuss these things?
Because it's a satire. Because it's I do talk about what I think about these things in my own voice because I write political articles and I say exactly what I think, right? But that's not funny, you know, right? And I want to be funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you know, one of my favorite things in satire is when people embody a character. Like the one I always mention is Joe Orton, the playwright back in the 60s, writing letters of complaint about his own plays to the press under the name Mrs. Edna Wellthorpe,
right.
Which is really funny.
And there are comedians at Edinburgh who have written their own reviews and slipped them online somehow.
Which is great.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
All of that stuff is really funny. Yeah. And I wanted to embody this sort of person. And let's face it, they're very recognizable. And this kind of left-leaning, po-faced, puritanical, very
pampered.
Pampered as hell, very privileged.
Who understands how minorities feel through her Filipino servants.
That's right. That's exactly what she says. She says, I grew up with Filipinos, so I have an affinity for people of color. Right.
Right.
And the fun with this is, you know, speaking through that voice, you can really exaggerate and play around with it. But of course, like you say, people get annoyed because they say, yeah, but you're a white man. Actually, they usually say you're a straight white man doing this.
They think you're straight.
They think I'm straight. That happens all the time, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, but you know me, so you know I'm... But there's nothing remotely straight about me.
Well, I mean, a woman accused me of being heterosexual in Birmingham at the Glee Club a few weeks ago. Yes, it was Gay Pride Birmingham, and I was closing the show, and she freaked out, ran across the stage, chased me in the green room, started screaming in my face after the show, screaming at me,
yeah.
How could you? How could you? And they had to restrain her and pull her off of me and take her out of the room because
yeah.
She wasn't permitted back there. There were signs everywhere by the way that said, you're not allowed back here if you're an audience member, but she ignored all that because she's a pampered white woman. And poked her finger in my face and told me I was awful. And when they got her outside, they're like, what's the problem? She said, how could you on Gay Pride have that straight man up there making fun of gay men? And they're like, he's gay. And she's like, no, he's not. I'm like, I've been cured.
No, but this is it. This is the point.
I'm healed. I can walk again.
You could not pass it straight. Jesus Christ. I mean, like,
it's interesting. Is I don't do anything to make them think I am.
Yes, you do, because you take the piss out of everyone. And you take the piss out of gay people as well. And to them, that's impossible. How could a gay man do that?
But I think also it's people saying, you know, how can he be powerful? Because to a lot of people, some people of certain classes, yours included, I think to middle class or upper middle class white people, I think when a man's expected to be a success, the idea of being gay, it's not that they're homophobic, but they just see gay men as a failure. They would never make that choice.
Well, she wants you to be contrite and to be
asexual,
like the fun little fluffy gay men. But you and I both know what gay men are like. It's like, and
well,
also,
they're like everything, like everybody
like
else.
Anyone else. You're like Kanye. You know, Kanye comes out in support of Trump, and he's not really a black man anymore. You can't be black and support Trump. Like that's the thing about intersectionality.
Yeah.
They don't judge you as a person. They judge you as what you are, not who you are.
As what they expect from you.
Yeah.
Look, let's play some of your stand-up so people get more of an idea of who you are as a comedian on stage. There's a section from your show I'd like to play right here.
I don't feel, I'll be honest with you, I don't feel part of the gay community. Do you know, I don't feel part of it. Like, I don't like that phrase. I don't like the phrase gay community. You know, because I sort of think, what does that even mean? Who's in this gay community, right? I'm in it. Martina Navratilova's in it. Ricky Martin, Doc One, is that a community? Is it? Or is that a travelling fucking freak show? Doesn't make any sense. And then lots of friends, they identify as LGBT, they prefer the LGBT. And actually, I've got a friend who actually self-identifies. Have you heard this? Oh, speaking as an LGBT person, right? You can't be an LGBT person, can you? You can't be lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. I'm fucking exhausted. And do you know what? I used to do this whole set piece about this, because you know it's getting longer and longer, LGBTQ, LGBTQI. I used to do this whole set piece where I used every single letter of the alphabet to describe. And it was a lot of fun, and I love doing it. I can't do that bit anymore in my show. And the reason for that is the gays are doing it for real, right? But I'm not kidding now. Like, the current phrase I'm meant to use is LGBTQIA+. Which is lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersexual, asexual, and then the plus is whatever cunt we've forgotten, basically. And it's difficult to keep up, isn't it? Other kins are new. I don't know if you've heard of other kins. If you're another kin is someone who identifies as being non-human. Another kin. Which is fine if you're Barry Manilow, I get that. But I kind of
when you talk about that bit in your act where you're describing titles or identities that people choose to apply to themselves as being divisive, do you really think that that's true? Or is that what inspires you to write about a community that you also identify with positively?
I think it is divisive because what it is encouraging us to do is sort of segregate and see ourselves predominantly by this label, right? And that forgets about the individual. And that's why I don't identify as gay. I just am gay because I'm attracted to men, right? That, I don't see it as an identity in that sense. I don't think that's helpful.
Did you ever identify politically as a gay person? No.
No, I don't. I think it's uninteresting.
What
to
are
me.
The politics people expect gay people to have?
Exactly. I know what they are. They expect you to be left-leaning.
Well, when the woman in Birmingham said you're straight, I thought, God, there goes my disposable income.
Right. Exactly.
Cancel all my trips for the next 12 months. It's over for me. But yeah, they expect you to be.
Reading that story about. Those gay men who came out for George Bush, and they were called fags for Bush. And the articles were like horrified. Like, well, how could a gay man be a Republican? I mean, this is ridiculous. Like, gay people aren't this monolithic block. I find it really patronizing. Like, we're all different and we all have different ideas about the world. And that's why I think it's divisive. Also, I mean, it's really alienating. Like, I mentioned in that bit about the LGBTQIA+ community, right? Mm. Who the fuck knows what all that means, you know? And you say that to
I thought the plus meant HIV positive, doesn't it?
I thought it meant just whatever, you know, I think I say in the set, whatever fucker we've forgotten. I think, I don't know.
What else you want to throw
Who
in
the
there?
Hell knows what yeah, it means, yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. And the vast majority of people do not care about this stuff. This is just this woke bourgeois vocal people online and in the media, and they think that what they're saying matters. No one cares.
But if it's a small group, as you just described, why do you find them dangerous?
Because they're powerful. So it isn't to do with...
Who are they?
Do you want specific names?
Yes.
I got into an argument the other day, actually, on Twitter, where this Guardian columnist said to me, I've watched an interview, and you're talking about these very privileged people in the media, very rich feminists. They don't exist. And I'm like, you work for The Guardian. Like, you're probably one of them. There's loads of them, right? Right. And she said, no, name them. And I said, no, I don't want to name them because I didn't want to get into an argument on Twitter where I'm naming people. And she kept pushing it. So I did name them. I named a list of really rich, really affluent columnists, which I can name if you want. And then she came back and said, thanks for that list of women you hate. I always knew you were a misogynist. It's like, okay, so that's the level we're at. That's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with people who can't argue or even think for themselves. All they can do is throw the word misogynist, racist, homophobe, and that's it done. I don't have to deal with that person. There are loads of really privileged, middle-class, bourgeois people in the media who want to talk about how oppressed they are and how victimized. Funny.
But aren't they a reaction to sort of the other extreme, which is sort of a right-wing media group, say, Fox News, some of the people that you've associated with in selling your book.
Associated with?
Well, just in selling your book.
That's so interesting because this is one of the major...
Tucker Carlson is one, a bow tie wearing racist and misogynist. Are you at all... And he is. He is a very unappealing person to listen to on TV. I'm just saying the way he presents himself.
Hey,
on
sure.
Fox.
Look, this is your opinion. That's your opinion. That's fine. I don't know enough about him.
Well,
we're going to play some of him.
Let me just play some of him right now so the audience can know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Whining from a black politician about how you don't like me because I'm black, using racism as a defense, right? You know, I catch you doing something that, well, oh, you're a racist. The Congressional Black Caucus exists to blame the white man for everything. And I'm happy to say that in public because it's true. Everybody knows it's true. You know, white men have, you know, they've contributed some, I would say, like creating civilization and stuff. I think they've done a pretty, I don't know, whatever. I still can't get over, you know, Obama saying they're not going to, you know, they're going to attack me because I'm black. I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, that is so low to say something like that.
Well, see, Tucker, here's
everybody knows that Barack Obama would still be in the state Senate in Illinois if he were white.
I'm a stand-up comic. I understand the effect of these things on an audience and the way you can use them to open up people's minds. Let me just finish. But I do wonder if you're at all worried for yourself being presenting a book that, as he says, you're a genius. He calls you a genius when he interviews you.
Yeah.
And, says, and he himself says, this book has to be read by people who are smarter maybe than some of the people following on Twitter. And I think he's right about that.
I think
to get the joke. But do you find yourself skating a thin ice with these people? Because you were interviewed by him for 4 minutes on Fox, and he seemed to like you.
Yeah, and he's he's entitled to do so. I am really worried about this idea of guilt by association. I think it's the major flaw on the left at the moment. Mm-hmm. So when you say affiliated with or associated with or whatever, that's not true.
I'm just saying you promote your book, that's all.
Well, I had a conversation with him about the book, which I think is perfectly fine. I am prepared to talk to virtually anyone, and I think that this guilt by association problem is why people don't take the left seriously anymore. Because what happens is, oh, you appeared on a platform with, or you spoke to this person. They think that attitudes and ideas are airborne,
well,
contagious.
I'm asking you, has this happened to you? In terms of your work, your booking currently, or
well,
or
you know, I mean, you must have had people retweet your tweets who you don't particularly like, right?
Sure.
Right, and you must have people who laugh at your jokes who you probably don't agree with either, and that's part of it. We as comedians aren't responsible for the people who like our material.
Yes, I've had other comedians tell me that, but now on an international platform that you're finding yourself. Does it concern you anymore now than it does as a live performer?
No, I think the big problem in politics, I mean, just leaving comedy aside, I think the big problem we have in politics is people aren't talking to each other anymore. And so what you end up with is people just mischaracterizing their enemy, right? It's very simplistic, I think, just to take a few things that someone has said and therefore make a complete judgment about who and what they are and sort of turn them into this kind of demon monster figure. I don't think it's helpful, right? We can all say... like I can say, for instance, with Boris Johnson, there are some things, or Nigel Farage, there are some things that those people have said that I hate and I really oppose. But I'm not going to just write them off as some sort of racist monster who we must never talk to, because nothing gets achieved that way. Mm. I'd much rather sit down and talk to them about what they think, right? So I think the thing about, for instance, Fox News, now I didn't realize the extent that people have this animosity towards Tucker Carlson and Fox News until I went to America and people said, wow, now you're tainted by talking to him. And I'm like, what are you I'm not going to play those games. I'm not going to do it because I think... That is what's damaging political discourse. We're creating tribes that don't understand each other, and more to the point, don't want to understand
each
other.
But are you alone in this, is what I'm asking you. Because because you are also trying to promote yourself effectively in a general sense. So do you think that by playing a game maybe that Tucker Carlson has already set up for himself, by including yourself in that game, do you think it's going to restrict you in any way?
It might do.
Have you found it doing that already?
It hasn't yet, but it might do. But if it does, that's beyond my control.
But it isn't. Because you could just say no to Tucker Carlson.
Well, if only I started... That would mean I'd be started playing the game that I absolutely oppose.
Yeah.
And actually, I think that would be... But I think that would be more dishonest.
But you're smart, Andrew, and you're intellectual. I'm talking about an audience that doesn't have... understand the trick
It would make me a hypocrite. If I go around as I do, and I've written articles about this, saying you've got to stop demonizing people who disagree with you, throwing around the word racist, Nazi, all the rest of it. If I then say I'm invited on to talk to someone who is a conservative and I'm coming from the left, and I say, no, I'm not going to talk to that person, I'm just then perpetuating the very problem that I spent all my time attacking. What kind of hypocrite would that make me? It's pointless, right?
It's also funnier if you don't do that. It's also funnier, I think, if you... find out what Tucker Carlson has to say.
It's so much more interesting.
If you said no to him, you would never know.
I am sure that we disagree on all sorts of things. He knows that. He knows that I come from the left, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I've never actually met him.
Associate yourself with left-wing politics then, in general?
Well, I just am. I just am on the left. But it's interesting that you mentioned, like when you were mentioning the people who really like Titania, you mentioned Ann Coulter, Tucker Carlson, you mentioned someone else on the right. But
well, Piers Morgan, it's hard to say where he is.
Well, yeah, that's difficult. Yeah. But there are lots of people on the left. You've had people like Shappi Khorsandi, Joe Rogan, people who aren't necessarily fitting into that box. Mm. It is appealing to a broad range of political people. And if I start just associating...
But those people are more mainstream than you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
Joe Rogan and Shappi are more mainstream than you are.
Yeah, that's...
So you're already a risk for people to hire
isn't
and
Isn't that
to,
part of the fun? Isn't it? Like, if I could turn this into a really anesthetized, boring thing that doesn't take any risks. And then where would we be? There's a million fuckers like that.
Yeah.
It's boring. I think I've got to the point in my career now where I'm too old to care about this stuff. I just do what I want to do and say what I want to say. And I'm not bothered if people make judgments about me on that basis, because inevitably their judgments will not be based on a full understanding.
So what inspires you? Well, let's play another part of your stand-up. There's another section about kids that I thought was very funny.
Really annoys me. What else offends me? What else? Kids, children, fuck up. Like, who does that? You know, like, kids reproduce to be bred? They bred, okay. I probably can't stand them, they're parasites. I'm like, because I'm going to think... But I don't get it. Like, I see friends of mine, their lives ruined by this phenomenon. Totally ruined. You know? What happens to people? Like, you're young, you probably haven't reproduced, you've never done that yet. Don't do it. Like, what happens to people? Because you get to a certain age, don't you? You're attractive young couple, you know, getting on the property ladder, getting married. Is that the point that you say to yourself, oh, I know what I'll do now, I know what I'll do. Why don't I invite a really noisy dwarf to come and live with me, who's just going to steal all my time and all my money and resent me for it? And secretly look forward to the day I die, just so it can pilfer whatever scraps remain of the joyless shipwreck that my life became.
So that section about children is hilarious. And also, you said earlier that you're too old to care. Are you at an age now where your friends have kids? Where you're socializing with people with families?
Yeah, they do, yeah.
Is that why you wrote that? Because people expect gay men to adopt now because we can.
They do. They expect us to be exactly the way that married people have always been and just to sort of, it's a very conservative thing. I mean, that's why the Conservative Party in the UK were the ones that pushed through gay marriage. Because it's in the interests of conservatives for gay people to get married. And we all then become, you know, this kind of, and I've got, look, I'm for gay marriage. I think it's a no-brainer. I think if the state is going to offer marriage to their citizens, it has to offer them to all of their citizens. If it's just a religious thing, that's different. That's up to the individual religion, right? So I think it's a no-brainer. But I also think that you know, it appeals to the more conservative gay man or woman, because they, you know, then they're in the kind of normal...
You're not going out every night. You're not getting coked up, apparently. You're less likely to wind up at Chia Wai actually with your trousers around your ankles.
I think.
In the toilet.
Beyond a certain age, that has to stop, right?
Does it?
No, probably not. Right. So there's all of that.
It's all over.
And I think, you know, what were we talking about?
I can't remember. But what inspires you to write stuff? So when you're writing, do you just write about what's happening to you right then?
Well, as her, or do you mean as me as a stand-up?
As you as a stand-up comic.
Yeah, it's always about what's going on at the moment. So,
I want to talk more about the book in a minute, but I just want to try to get a feeling of...
Like, well, you know, I mean, we react to what's going on in our lives, don't we? And I mean, like, there are so many comedians who are desperate for bad things to happen to them so that they've got something to write about, right? And they put sometimes they put themselves in weird situations so they've got something to write about.
Oh, who do you know that's done that?
Who was the guy who went off to... Alex Edelman. And he went to these Nazi meetings... as a Jewish guy, and he went to these meetings so that he would then have something to write a show about, which is a great idea.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting. I didn't see the show, but I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah.
My last show, which I toured at the start of the year, was about the stuff that has happened to me, which has come about through things like Jonathan Pye and Tanya McGrath. And the things
so you wrote for Jonathan Pye for a few years.
Yeah.
And you helped create that character.
Tom created, the guy who plays him created the character. He brought me on a couple of months after he created it because Tom's so interested in politics and he wanted someone who was more interested in politics to help write it.
Describe the character to people listening.
The character is a kind of, how can I put it, a frustrated news reporter. And the point of the satire is that it's the bits in between, you know, like when the camera goes off and then he'll rant about it. That was Tom's original idea. He saw, I think it was a... some British newsreader.
An actual clip like that.
Yeah, an actual clip where the news... I can't remember who it was now. Where the newsreader was... It cut away, and then he said something about someone's tits or something. Like, it was... You know, and it's that thing about a newsreader is essentially performing, and you don't really know what they really think behind the scene, you know? So that was what that was all about.
Maura Stewart, though. We knew what she was thinking.
Oh, we all know. Yeah, she's got a reputation, you know. But so I did that for a few years. But because of that, and because we ended up talking about politics a lot, and a lot of my sort of more kind of like pro-free speech stuff and skepticism about the left, that started coming through very much as the character developed.
How do you identify free speech then? What do you think it actually is?
Free speech is the right to say whatever you want with no encumbrance by the state, no threat of prosecution, no threat of deplatforming. I think
has that happened in the UK in the last few years?
It has indeed. Yeah, there's the police are arresting roughly 3,000 people a year on the basis of things they have said online. That doesn't necessarily lead to prosecution, I should add, but there are things like that. People have served.
You mean dangerous threats or just people?
No, jokes and or sometimes horrible, nasty, fucked up, racist shit. Absolutely. But then a lot of it is just jokes. There was one guy who served 3 months in prison for posting a joke on Facebook. It wasn't his joke. He'd taken it from another website. A joke about Madeleine McCann. Now, you've made jokes about Madeleine McCann on stage.
Yes. She's on Netflix currently.
Yeah. So
that little bitch is asking for it.
Right. So that you've just done there. And this has been transmitted and broadcast.
She's finally earning some money for the rest of us. £11 million has cost to not find her. She better be good in bed. So £11 million. Come on.
You could do a jail term for that, right? Now that it's been broadcast. No, I'm sorry.
If only.
According to the Electronic Communications Act 2003, you have just broken the law if anyone finds that grossly offensive, right? So there is this, there was the girl in...
And I've never been put in jail because...
Do you know what? It would be an amazing publicity stunt. You should push for this.
It's funny because I said to a comic who we've booked on the show in a few weeks, he said, who's your first guest? I said, Andrew Doyle. He said, oh, he's funny. I said, he is. And he said, he's really funny because he talks about free speech and then kicks people out of his shows, which I thought was funny that they knew that.
That's
because
really
that
funny.
Video from YouTube that became quite popular
with
you dealing with a heckler. Let's play that video really quick.
Now, look, the thing about the Fringe is sometimes it can get quite exciting, right? Sometimes I think you need a bit of theatricality. These guys were actually a plant, right? I wanted this shit to go down, right? Because I sort of believe, I think just telling jokes is boring, right? I think it's much better if you get sort of physically assaulted. I think that's a good idea. And the drama's still going on. You're really stressed about this, aren't you?
I'm a bit... I don't like to see this.
No, I know. I know, isn't it hard? I know. But that's the beauty of the theatre, right? People don't like King Lear, they don't like the bit where he stabs his eyes out, right? But that's great. It's really visceral, it's important, right? It's good. Oh, no. She's always saying it's like my fault or something. I can't account for the cunts in my audience.
I'm really pissed off.
I know. Well, I know, it's tough, isn't it?
I'm getting quite...
You're getting flashbacks to the nun, aren't you? I bet nothing like this happened with her, right?
2011, right?
Yeah.
And someone just threw a drink in your face.
2012, yeah.
12, and you kicked them out of the show. Yeah. But they threw the drink in your face as they were leaving.
So what happened there was, it's an hour-long show. Obviously, I had to trim it right down because they were there for the first 20 minutes.
You trimmed
the show.
It for 3 hours because I saw the original.
Oh, right, okay.
Down
right.
to 60 minutes.
yeah, that's right. And the front row were just completely drunk. You know that level of drunk where they're just disengaged because they don't know what's going on. They're so drunk.
And it happens in the Fringe a lot.
It does. And it was annoying the rest of the audience. And the audience couldn't enjoy the show because they kept jumping in on punchlines. And you know how it is. I dealt with them for about 10, 15 minutes. And it got to the point where it's like, no, this is you're ruining it for everyone else who's paid.
Were they threatening you?
No, not at all. I think they were intimidating other members of the audience. But it got to a point where it's like, you've got to get out because if you don't get out... All these other people who've paid money are going to have wasted their money. They're here to see the show, not to hear you people. So I did the right thing and I told them to leave. And then he threw the beer in my face. And of course,
did you think about pressing charges?
No.
All right.
No.
It's assault.
Well, it is technically assault, but it's liquid. I'm fine with that. I'm not fine with it. It's not a good thing to do. It didn't even cross my mind to press charges. So I would say, though, that is not free speech.
Did it improve the audience's response to the show, the way you dealt with it?
Yes, 100%. Because while they were in there, being this weird drunk presence, the show couldn't really work because there was always this atmosphere in the audience of this tense atmosphere.
But also, they want to see you deal with hecklers in the
right,
country, don't
as
they?
As soon as they'd gone, the whole atmosphere lightened and people were really into it. Just to address the point you made about...
But did it lighten you?
Well, wait, I need to address that point about free speech because I think it's really important. It is not a free speech issue if you throw someone out of a show for misbehaving. When someone buys a ticket to a show, they are entering into a contract to behave in a certain way as a member of the audience, right?
Are they?
Yes, they are. It's the same with
social contract.
It's the same with the fire in a theatre thing. It's not a free speech issue, okay? If you want to go to the theatre, you don't shout fire, right? That's part of it. It's not a free speech issue at all. So I was right to eject them. He was not right to throw beer in my face. However, it did improve the show when he did.
Right. Did it improve your performance, you think?
Yeah, well, of course, I hadn't been going that long back then. And it was a really good learning curve for me. And what I realized is, as soon as I acknowledged it and talked about them, the show was so much fun. And yeah, it was great. And it really helped because that went online and then sold out the rest of the run.
The thing is, in this country, people really expect heckling to be part of the show. Mm. So you have to decide for yourself as a performer on stage when you're going to call it quits with these people and get rid of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you ever thrown
someone out?
I picked a woman up in Edinburgh. I put my hands in her armpits and lifted her
So you physically threw
her in 2008, and I got her out of the room because it got. She tried to get up on stage, she grabbed the mic out of my hand, and the minute she made contact with me, I thought all bets are off. But this was 2008. This is before the what about me hashtag bullshit with people. Now, so you can't touch me, you can't touch my arm, even though my tits out. I was walking home in Newcastle last week from the stand, and all tits were out, and I mean tits out on the street. A woman was wiping her face with her skirt, and I could see her pussy, and I thought, you know. I don't know how this all works, but all I can say is, if you come in a comedy club and you come at me, I'm going to fucking punch you in the face, you cunt, which I have also had to do.
You should just say what you think. That's really... Well, stop mincing your words.
This guy came at me, and I was banned from that club in Soho because I made another Maddie McCann joke.
Right.
Jesus, people can't let go.
I've seen people go for you with the Madeline McCann.
They have.
Do you remember that hen night? Those women,
Well, and I've said, you know, she's not... You know, you, whatever you do is not going to save her. She's still going to get, you know... Torture,
exactly.
Tormented.
You joking about it isn't the problem.
No,
it's whoever kidnapped her. That's
who's
the problem.
Broke the law. That's the problem.
That's the problem.
And so this guy came at me, and he was in front of me putting his jacket on, and called me a sad fucking queer.
Okay.
And I see stars.
That's your red line, isn't it?
It kind of is.
Yeah.
Like a schoolyard thing. So I opened my hand, open handed gesture, and I banned him. I hit him in the side of his temple.
Yeah.
Totally fair in a schoolyard, legal too. But we weren't. Anyway, so. He's like, I just had head surgery. I'm like, it didn't fucking work. And the club banned me for like 5 years.
I remember that.
Yeah. So actually, okay, it was a woman. I'm saying it's a guy to protect myself. It was a woman.
You beat up a woman in public.
More than once. But because it seems so, in comedy clubs, women think it's free for all because they're not going to be touched by the security because the club will be sued.
I don't have this problem because I'm a terrible physical coward. You know, if someone were to come at the stage, I wouldn't fight
them. But I am too. Totally.
Really?
Yes. I hate violence. I don't know how to defend myself. But I get crazy when people start to come at me. Like, this is these two instances. They become gender nonspecific, but that's a PC thing, isn't it?
Well, of course.
It?
I mean, if people come at you, it's self-defense. They're the problem. They caused it. You can't run at someone on a stage and then complain if they
but
throw you out.
But this woman was so drunk at the 2008 show.
Right. You had to get her out.
I had to look her out. But I can't, obviously, The Guardian was in that night. So it's not. I'm sure it's not the show Scott had written. We didn't see the real show. He reviewed me all right, but it was difficult because the show after that became something different, as you've described from your experience with this person with the beer in the face. So I'm just saying, when you perform here, you kind of have to be ready for all this
stuff.
Yeah, you
do. And I'm used to heckles now. I get them a lot.
Although your audience now must agree with who you are and what you talk about.
No, not at all. I mean, when I was touring the Jonathan Pye show, remember, that was too big.
You were opening for him, supporting
him. I did the opening slot, which is like 20, 25-minute slot.
And to be fair, this guy, this Jonathan Pye, just so people know, he was not a stand-up comic, was he? He was an actor.
No, that's right. So the show itself with Jonathan Pye was more like a one-man play kind of thing. I was doing a stand-up set at the start. And my political views...
And he toured the UK.
He toured the UK to big rooms, like 3,000-seater rooms. My set was not politically online with what most of those people in that room thought, right? But that was great. That was part of the challenge. I liked that. I'm always very nervous. You know, a lot of the people who liked Tanya probably like her because they hate these people she's taking the piss out of, right? But I get very wary of people who are just laughing because they agree. That's why with that tour, I really had to think about how I can land this material about stuff when I'm expressing an opinion that they all hate and still make them laugh. Mm. That's so much, because otherwise I'm just being lazy.
Yeah.
Like if I tell jokes about Theresa May, the Prime Minister, that's easy. But I'll still do it. But sometimes at the back of my head, I'm thinking, are they laughing just because they hate Theresa May? Is the joke good enough?
Of course.
And the only way I would know is if I did that joke in front of a bunch of conservative Theresa May supporters.
Now, when you say good enough, do you mean does the joke make you laugh?
That's a good question. I think, obviously, as stand-up comics, we gauge the success of a joke on how well it goes down with an audience. Okay? Sometimes I've written a joke that I think is brilliant, and no one laughs. And I have to accept that that's not a successful thing for stand-up purposes. I'm not one of those sort of stubborn people that be like, no, I'm saying that even if no one else finds it funny but me. But on the other hand, I think as a writer, you have to be true to yourself and you have to trust your own instincts. But yeah, you know this because you know as you develop material as a stand-up, you end up weeding out stuff that just doesn't land.
Well, yeah, but do you work with other writers in your material? Do you write everything yourself?
For Tanya, myself, and for my stand-up, myself.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But for Jonathan Pye, it was me and Tom, and up until January of this year. And
Why have you stopped working with Tom?
But I have collaborated with loads of other things. Oh, I think I'm just, we both want to just do different things. I'm really into this Tatiana character at the moment, but I also know it won't last forever. You know, it's of this time. And so I want to devote all my energies to it. I'm having a lot of fun with it, but I'm not naive enough to think that it's going to... Like, all of these sorts of characters have a shelf life, don't they? Because they're very much satirizing something of the moment. So that can't go on forever. She would have to develop. You know, she'd have to... Something would have to change about her. So I'm already doing that by doing a live show, casting an actor to play her in a live show.
Right, I was going to ask you, is Titania appearing live at the Edinburgh Fringe?
At the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, yeah. And that's going to be like, similarly, it's a one-person play, really. It's a woman, a young woman who's going to play her, and it's going to be like her.
But you can't call her a woman.
Why?
Does she call herself a woman?
She calls herself a woman, but she spells it W-O-M-X-N.
Why is that?
Because otherwise it has the word man in it.
Right.
And that she doesn't like men, but also that would be transphobic.
So she doesn't like men?
She hates men. But right. She also thinks that she thinks that anyone who is a man or who identifies as a man is a misogynist. Because if you weren't a misogynist, you'd transition to female.
Right.
But she also thinks that...
she's an actual female from birth.
Yes. She also... but she thinks that being a woman is transphobic as well. So that's why...
Transphobic?
Yeah.
You mean afraid of trans people?
Yeah, because you're enforcing the gender binary by subscribing to
it. So she's not binary?
She's full of contradictions. That's the point.
Right.
She talks about being non-binary. Sometimes she's...
is she gay?
Polygender. She's ecosexual.
What does that mean? That's a word you've made up.
No, that's real.
Oh,
so,
right.
So ecosexuals... I mean, there's a chapter in the book on ecosexuality about... She has a boyfriend who's a cactus. She has sex with...
She said, but that's what tweezers are made for.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
And help you with the cactus problem.
Exactly, right. After sex, post-coital. Right.
Yeah. Post-cactus coital.
That's right.
Right.
She's an ecosexual... Because there's some academics who started this ecosexuality thing where they say that they have sensual sexual relations with plant life. And she's...
There are people who have actually expressed this in real life.
And
right.
She liked that idea because it makes her more of a victim, you know, because there's such a minority.
You know,
you've got bi people, straight people, gay people, you know, all that. But there's not many ecosexuals. So she's right at the butt. So she loves it for that reason.
Yeah, right. And so, this person, do some people still think that Titania's a real person that you come in
contact
with?
I get it all the time. Every day there are people, I don't know if you saw my tweets yesterday, she was getting in big arguments with people. She put a tweet out saying, look, firefighters get this much every year, mostly male. Receptionists get this much every year, less, mostly female. We need gender parity. There's the gender pay gap here, right? And then all these people saying, look, you're comparing two different jobs. What are you talking about? And so she had arguments with lots of people.
How is it people still following Titania are not seeing the parity involved?
The people who often respond don't follow her. So what happens is these gets retweeted and people just...
Right.
And because it's so close to what actual people are saying... People think it's real and they respond. And because it's social media, they have this knee-jerk response. They're like, oh, fuck you, bitch. You don't know what you're talking about. And what's fun is I stay in character and argue with them. And we have these big rows. And then I screenshot it and put it on Twitter. And what I like about that is the people who argue with her tend to be conservatives, extreme conservatives who are really angry with what she's saying because they're taking her literally. So the joke's on them there.
Uh-huh.
When I'm mocking the social justice movement, I'm often mocking people on the left. So this way, I get to mock people on the extreme left and the extreme right. It's about mocking the extremes.
Right.
And that way, that's how I make it a nonpartisan
but
character.
But who's on your team? What if something like what happened to Milo?
Yeah.
Who's a very well-known activist, Milo...
Yiannopoulos.
Yes. From this country, who's gay, self-identified as gay, but also right-wing and a Trump supporter, and actually threw a celebratory party for Trump after he won.
Yeah.
And thought
he used to call him daddy.
Yes, he did. And thought that these people were all on his side, this Milo. He thought, oh, these people will support me. And then he made a statement about a relationship he'd had, or the idea of being a young gay man having a relationship with someone who's much older than you.
Yeah.
He made a statement in support of that, and he lost all of the support he thought he had on the right because extreme writers... hate queers.
And
so suddenly he realized he had no support because left-wingers had already abandoned him.
It's very interesting because what happened with him actually is that he was due to speak at CPAC, the Conservative Conference in America. It was a major deal. He had this book deal with Simon & Schuster. It was Republicans who pushed this smear campaign.
They did,
So it was...
But they had been his support system before that, hadn't
they? Well, I don't think so. I think there's a contingent within the Republican movement, obviously, who don't like gay men, right? And they were waiting for their opportunity to leak this this recording and to destroy Milo. That's what they were doing. So it came from the right.
But I'm saying, do you worry about this yourself? Because so much of the support, in the US at least, for your book, particularly online that I saw, has come from the right.
Yeah,
so
that's
true. And in this country, too, some of the reviews.
Yeah, I totally accept
that. So are you worried about them abandoning you at some point?
The people on the left who get it are the smart ones, as in that they...
Which are very few and far between.
Yeah, I know. They said there was a great article in the Herald, and it wasn't the most glowing review, but he got it. He was talking about He says, I'm a lefty, I'm a liberal lefty.
The Herald from Scotland?
From Scotland, yeah.
Which is a right-wing paper.
Yeah, but he's a left-wing writer. Oh, right. He was a liberal left writer, and he said, social justice needs to be something we can celebrate. These people make it look stupid. They make it look ridiculous.
You mean the people you parody in your book?
Exactly. So he got what I'm doing, right?
Yes.
The simplistic, infantile interpretation is, oh, you're having a go at gays and trans people and Muslims and all the rest of it. Right. That's the remedial interpretation, right? The correct.
You call the Chinese Orientals in your book?
Yeah, she would. Yeah, this is the great thing about Titania is actually she's a bit racist,
right?
She's a bit racist. She's a bit like she's a bit anti-Semitic. She's got all that kind of. So she's got all the flaws that she accuses everyone else of, but they just, what I like to do is I like it to slip out. It's like when she's going on about The Simpsons. She went on about, and it's not in the book, but on Twitter, she went on and on about The Simpsons being racist, stereotype, saying, look, even that Mr. Burns character is a terrible Jewish stereotype. Well, of course, Mr. Burns isn't Jewish, but right. She just assumes because he's a money-grabbing bastard that he is, right? So it's a way that you reveal her own prejudices.
Why didn't you play her in Edinburgh? Why did you not play her yourself?
I want it to be real. I want it to be a young woman.
Have you hired somebody yet?
Yeah. Well, no. We've whittled it down to 5 potential candidates.
So much fun for you to watch this every night, to go and watch how people react. It may be an extreme reaction each night, right?
Is the
actress worried?
Well,
it can get violent.
I know.
It has gotten violent online. I mean, verbally. I mean, not verbally, but in terms of threats to you.
I have never seen so much violence and vitriol in my life.
Is the actress anxious about this?
I got an email the other day saying I should be we know some gangsters who will get you and all this sort of stuff.
Get you or Titania?
Me. And this is the thing, like, you get this. Someone else said I should be burnt, thrown into a volcano, which is actually quite funny. But the thing is, I think it's very interesting that all
okay, there's a gay club in Naples. Maybe they meant that.
Maybe, possibly, yeah. Yeah, they're being friendly. All the thing is, right, the woke people online and all these sort of social justice activists, they think they're the good guys. They think they're really virtuous and wonderful. They are the most vicious, evil cunts I've ever seen, right? They really are. But what makes it worse is they think they're doing it for good. It's like any kind of religious zealot who thinks they're doing something for good. So that would justify the most repugnant behavior.
They're usually defending other people they don't even know, right?
Yeah, sure.
All their ethnic
concerns
with no minority friends of
their
own.
They're doing, they misinterpret what I'm doing. They mischaracterize me, and that justifies their own vitriol.
But what I'm saying is, do you think you're putting an actress at risk?
No, look.
Because Edinburgh can get quite... Well, you've proven that.
Right,
Edinburgh
so here's
can
the thing.
Quite threatening.
I don't know who's going to play her yet. We're down to the last few people. They're all brilliant, and it's really difficult to know who's going to play it. Whoever the person is will have a full awareness. They already do. I mean, they've come in, they've read the book, they've read the tweets, they know the potential controversy around it. Mm. So they're going into this fully aware of what it is. Nobody's being used. Nobody has to accept the job, right?
But are you anxious about it?
My view is if you get anxious about idiots misinterpreting your work, you'd never do anything.
But you... Putting yourself in that position is fine because you, but I get nervous about live performance. I would love to have someone else do my act just to watch it. I think that'd be a great Edinburgh preview.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting.
But I'm always anxious about handing my material to somebody else because I have done that in the past.
Yeah.
I was on a TV show where we had to swap material and the comic doing my material started to apologize for my act in the middle of it.
Oh no.
On live TV.
That's bad.
He started to say he was sorry to his grandkids at home watching.
You see, I think...
He said, I would never blow somebody, you guys. I'm really sorry about this.
Oh, pathetic.
Yeah. But he... Just doing my act made him nervous. And I have seen comics. You're one of them. Margaret Cho's one.
Yeah.
Where I've watched them. And I've, of course, been in awe of both of you on stage. But I've also been on the edge of my seat wondering what the fuck is going to happen next. Now, I think that should be a part of live performance, especially stand-up comedy.
Yeah, interesting.
But I look around, I watch the audience, and I'm actually nervous for the two of you because I don't want to see my friends get punched.
Well, like you know, I had that group.
But you have put yourself in that position, yeah. So that's fine, right? I always, you know...
Now, you're saying that, but am I worried for the actor who plays her?
Yeah.
But the thing is... I would be if I had misled anyone in any way. Mm. Whoever plays her will have a full comprehensive understanding of what the situation is.
And a defense course they have to go through to learn how to swing at somebody.
They're going to be tough, right? Yeah. Like I don't like this idea. And particularly, like, I had this when I wrote the Jonathan Pye thing with Tom about the gender pay gap. And it was Pye talking to a feminist. And the feminist was effectively challenging the idea of the gender pay gap. And then loads of people said, oh, this is gross. This is two males putting words into a female's mouth. I'm like, that's called a script. You dumb motherfuckers. It's called a script. And if you're not familiar with the idea of an author writing a character, then basically you should be hospitalized.
But there are a lot of people who feel like men don't know how to write for women. I've seen vice versa, that women have been criticized ridiculously.
Stay in your lane. Look, for years people have been saying, why aren't male writers writing better female characters? Well, look, I've just written a show for a one-woman show, right? So you know.
When I first started, and still now, I've had people recently tell me, you really shouldn't talk about women's body parts on stage.
You can talk about whatever you want.
Well, apparently not.
Jesus. And also, anyway, the thing is, if she agrees to do the role, then she agrees to what might come with that. We're going to obviously take precautions.
Yes.
We are going to have security.
Yes.
But it's not, look, I don't find it that controversial.
But you don't think that you're edgy or offensive.
Not at all.
But if you don't think that, then what's all this stuff happening online directed at you?
I accept.
You must be edgy. By definition, you are.
Well, or they're hypersensitive.
Well, you. But what offends you? What do you find offensive then?
Things that are personal attacks against me. What I really hate is people.
But without personal attacks,
all right,
you'd be selling books.
It's helpful. What offends me? I think people who really sermonize and moralize when they know nothing about what they're talking about. That really annoys me. Like virtually every Guardian columnist.
Have they reviewed your book, The Guardian?
The Observer did. Yeah, they said lampooning the language of social justice is a cheap shot.
Oh.
I love that quote.
How dare you?
It's great.
Yeah.
you know, just anyone who's going on, like, that's the problem with the woke lot. They offend me. Yeah, because they're going on about.
But you think they're dangerous. You said that in Tucker Carlson. I think these are dangerous people.
I think they're dangerous because they're regressing us to a sort of pre-civil rights era where everyone mistrusts each other, where everyone's hyper aware of race and sexuality and gender to the extent that they are actually enhancing racism and homophobia in the attempt to diminish it.
Give me an example of that. You must have one.
There's plenty. I mean, if you say that there was the university that pushed for LGBT-only dormitories and they're saying we need a safe space to keep these people safe, right? And all that's doing is segregate. That's segregation. It's just another form of it. And they're encouraging gay people to mistrust straight people.
Yeah.
And actually, that's not the way the world can work. You know, this is happening. You must have noticed this. It's happening all the time.
I've seen it on college campuses in the US, and I've been told to not tour them, although I have.
Yeah.
And I found them fine. But I think it's always a comic's job to find a way to make your material accessible to a room full of strangers.
Yeah, I agree.
And comics who complain about how quote-unquote woke
university
audiences are in the States are just, I think, being lazy. The audiences are fine. You just have to find a way. And it's part of the challenge. Yeah, it's just part of the fun. Like you said on your tour.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing. Like, I'm not going to turn down a gig because I'm worried that the people won't agree with me. I'll see that as
a challenge.
You might
actually accept it for that reason.
I'd love it. I like the challenge of it. I've done it. I think it is really interesting. And also, I want to talk to these people. I don't want to live in this echo chamber.
Yeah, it's not a seminar, is it? It's a conversation.
Yeah.
What audience do you find more inspiring as a performer? A quote-unquote conservative audience or a liberal audience?
I like the audiences that are open-minded and a comedy literate, right? Mm-hmm. This is why I set up this comedy night in London, to sort of cultivate a comedy literate audience that don't take comedy at face value, right? So you know that the people who get offended at your material are the ones who think you literally mean what you are saying, right? Which is just a stupid, infantile approach to comedy.
Mm. It can be difficult, though, I must say, on a circuit performance, the same touring. I'm not doing my own show. I'm just part of. I'm closing a show.
Yeah.
And I'm doing a 20-minute set. The audience is not really there to see me. They're there to see a show.
Yeah, but you have
And then there's 6'2" queer ones on stage and yells at them for 20 minutes about how stupid they are. And they might get a bit touchy about
that's
that.
That's fine. But, when I see your act and when anyone sees your act, you very clearly establish what your persona is and what you're doing.
Not in Birmingham, not at the Glee Club, not on that Saturday.
Not if you're drunk and stupid, right. Okay, but
her mother had just died the night before at 3 a.m. She barely made it to the show and I ruined her 60th birthday party. That's what she said.
Is that what she said?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the essence of entitlement, isn't it?
It was her party, her night.
Exactly.
Her thing.
All of these people who do... I'm not talking about the drunks who think they're helping or the hecklers who are having fun. Mm. I'm talking about the ones who get offended, the sort of Mary Whitehouse, prissy uptight people, right? These Puritans, these Pharisees.
It feels like they want the show to be about them.
That's all this is. This is narcissism. We are living in this age where narcissism is definitely on the rise. I mean, all the studies are telling us this. And it's really entitled. I sit in a comedy night, and rather than... If I'm not enjoying your act, right, mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit there... My view would be to sit there and not laugh and let other people enjoy what they want to enjoy. Mm. But if I'm an entitled twat, I'll stand up and say, no, I'm not enjoying this, so you must change your act to suit me. And all these other people should stop laughing at things that upset me, right? It's basically a kid in a creche.
Do you think that part of the reason you've written what you've written, and you do what you do now, because I can feel your anger seethe, and I know what you're like, because we've known each other for a very long time.
I'm not angry today. I'm in a good mood today.
Interesting. And, but do you think that your material currently is a reaction to the kind of responses you received when you were attempting the circuit in this country? Because you worked the circuit for quite a long time.
Yeah.
But you worked it successfully, like everybody else. Some nights were good, some were bad.
I think it's just
you're not on the circuit now.
I do club gigs still.
You do?
Yeah. Every now and then, yeah.
Not just the clubs you've organized, which is a fantastic gig, which is Comedy Unleashed in East London on the first Tuesday of every month.
Second Tuesday of every month. It's
a marvelous audience and very mixed politically, I would think.
Yeah,
you would
but agree. I did the stand recently. I did
Were you part of a lineup or your own show?
Yeah, I'm part of a lineup.
And how did that feel for you now?
I still do club gigs, just not as frequently as I used to.
Right.
It's fun. It's really fun. It's like it's that thing you say. It's not the audience you're used to. It's something different. I like it.
Do you think that you enjoy it now because you understand more now how to make your material more accessible because you have done that?
Yeah, exactly.
I've got
a sort of club set that I can do that isn't particularly political, right? I mean, I'm not going to go in a late night club and start going on about identity politics and stuff, you know? I've got a club set that works and I enjoy it.
And what do you talk about in that set?
I talk about stuff about relationships, Catholicism.
You're in a relationship.
Yeah, I am. So I talk about, but I lie on stage. You know, I talk about family, but again, it's a lie because I make up family members. And stuff. You know, I do club set and I do a joke and it's fun. And sometimes I slip in stuff about politics, but not. I don't make it too political heavy. Whereas if I do a show, my own show, people know what they're coming to see. They're coming to see someone who's going to talk about politics and things.
Well, let's talk about Titania, the book Woke, a little bit more. Do you mind reading a little bit from it?
I can do, but it's not my voice.
It's so fine. But do you mind reading the chapter, Suck My Hashtag? And if you see where I've marked it with the pencil, sorry, I wrote in your book, but you'll see...
It's vandalism.
Read as much as you like at the beginning from that, just so people can hear your voice and hear a bit of the book. And
okay.
Now, again, this is Titania McGrath. Will you describe who she is, please? It's very complex.
The problem with this is... I do not sound like her, and I do not. So you have to imagine I'm a posh woman in her early 20s. In early 2018, I decided to become more industrious on social media. I was inspired by other activists who had made use of their online platforms in order to spread their message and explain to people why they are wrong about everything. In the digital age, the internet is the weapon of choice for anyone who is serious about social justice. The successors to the likes of Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi are now to be found on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. In many ways, these modern-day keyboard warriors have surpassed the work of King, who in any case was on record as saying that he believed people should not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. He clearly knew nothing about intersectionality and was therefore a self-hating racist.
So... Okay. Wrong skin is a word that you use in the book. What does that word mean? Did you make it up?
I didn't make it up. It was a thing that was, there was a hashtag, wrong skin hashtag, at the time of Rachel Dolezal in America. And she said
delicious.
That she...
The woman who's the head of the NAACP.
Yeah, who was white.
In the town she lived in, I think.
Yeah. So she's always been white. She's genetically white.
Yes.
And she said that she always knew she was black, because as a little girl, she used to color in pictures of herself with a brown crayon rather than a peach crayon.
And there were some black women in her community that were like, hello, can you look at her? Because she's not black. They pointed out to other people.
Yeah, but she identifies as black. And she says that she was born in the wrong skin.
Do you like her? Do you like Rachel?
I think she's hilarious.
Is she a sociopath? Psychopath?
I'm not in a position to diagnose her, but I would suggest that it's not all right there. You know, but what's worse is everyone taking her seriously. I mean, there are people on the news seriously saying, yeah, but if she identifies as black, can't she be black? No. No, she fucking
can't. Can men identify as women and vice versa?
I think that's a much more complicated issue. I think there are loads of people I've known who have genuinely felt this kind of discomfort with their own gender. But that's more to do with gender stereotypes. That's more to do with our cultural ideas about what it means to be male and what it means to be female, right? I think something as overt and obvious, and of course, as you know, masculine and femininity, male and female, these things are bound up with gender norms and societal gender norms. That's not the same for the color of your skin.
I do notice, though, that people get touchier lately about the gender stuff.
Yes, exactly. Because
is that going to stop or should I stop?
Well, that is, no, you should talk about it all the more. Like that, this whole area is because people are reluctant to have a debate. We need a debate about trans issues.
They're really touchy about trans issues out there.
We haven't had the debate. We need the debate.
But the
right?
Victorians figured it out. All the toilets publicly were trans in Victorian times. There were stalls and you shared a sink. It all made sense. They weren't trans toilets, but in the end they were.
Well, that
why don't we just do that?
That whole thing is a bit of a non-issue for me. What the issue for me is about what the Conservative government are doing with the Gender Recognition Act. Mm. Can you just decide that one day you're female without any surgery, without anything whatsoever, without even making an effort to change your outfit?
Isn't a lot of this conversation about the trans conversation about gender, about equal pay in the workplace for women? Isn't that what it's about?
No, I don't think so. We've got equal pay. We've had it for 50 years.
But women aren't paid equally statistically.
Yes,
though.
They are.
All over the UK?
Yeah. It's illegal to pay a woman less for the same work. It's illegal. Has been for 50 years. It doesn't happen.
Anywhere?
No. If it happens, you can take them to a tribunal.
It happens in the US. Oh, you can, but do people?
Same in the US. It was illegal in the US before. What you're talking about is like the gender pay statistics are based on median income, on the average income. Mm. And that takes into account it doesn't distinguish between part-time and full-time. Uh-huh. The women tend to do part-time work more than men do part-time. But there's all sorts of variables, absolutely huge. It's been debunked. There's no economist that takes this stuff seriously.
What about the word yestergay? Is that a word you've made up? Yestergay?
No, I think that's real, isn't it? Yestergay?
Never heard that word before.
Yeah. I think so. I've heard it on the scene.
I heard it in your stand-up yesterday.
Yeah, I think it's real.
What does it mean?
When you were gay, but you've suddenly turned straight and married a woman.
Right. I wanted to ask you one other thing before we have to go. I'm going to have you back, though, because we have to cover more stuff.
Okay.
Has Trump and his recent behavior kind of dampened the squid of your book? And that, there are conservative people who do use terminology and words to everyone's detriment.
Right. Such as
Donald Trump, I think, about grabbing women's pussies and stuff.
Oh, I see what you mean. I didn't know.
It's degrading to everybody. So
it's degrading to the office of the president, yeah.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, do you think that pointing to people's sensitivity about an issue like that?
Yeah.
Is that kind of that actually has happened, that person does, Trump actually does have power? I mean, the Nazis did have power, and they do regenerate themselves sometimes. Do these things worry you? Because you make fun of people that are worried about that in your book.
What worries me is that people who think that Donald Trump is a Nazi, if they are that historically illiterate and they don't want to know what a Nazi means, they shouldn't talk about it.
Is he a fascist?
No.
No.
Of course he fucking is.
How would you label him if you had to choose a word to describe Trump?
When was he calling for a one-party state? When did that ever happen? When is he murdering his opponents?
He acts like a king a little bit sometimes.
Look, you're talking about...
He wanted the election hand. He said, just give me the election. I've already won it. He said that.
I am no fan of Trump. And you know that he should be... anyone in that level of power should be able to criticism and ridicule, of course, right? But you
he
have
must
to
remove the power of the press, he said that too.
Yes, I think he's not good on press freedom. Right. Neither, by the way, the Conservative Party or the Labour Party. Right. Neither is Jeremy Corbyn.
Right.
But and all of these people should be criticised and mocked as a result. But... if you have to make the distinction between behavior that you find objectionable and fascism, if you can't do that, you don't know about history.
And the only place that we feel like we can still talk about that is a comedy club, sort of, isn't it? Because people seem so touchy about it.
They are really touchy, and it's partly out of people just not knowing anything about history, but it's also partly because they just want to attack and go on the attack rather than open dialogue, and that's why Trump won. Because Clinton stood there and said, you're all deplorables. I don't want to talk to you. You're all racist.
She ran a terrible campaign.
Terrible campaign,
that fucked up tooth and that weird hair.
And isn't it weird?
Suits.
After that, I thought after that happened, well, the Democrats might sort the left, might sort their issues
They're
out.
They're not
no,
listening though, are they?
Double down. Let's do it. Let's do exactly what we did before, twice as much. That'll work. Yeah, well done. You've just guaranteed Trump's a second term.
Yay,
well
more done. Comedy material. Listen, thank you for dropping by. I'm sorry I have to rush you out, but you've offended the entire staff of this comedy club.
Good.
We're talking to you from the marvelous Top Secret in central London. Andrew Doyle, thank you so much for dropping by. And
thanks.
The book is...
Woke, A Guide to Social Justice by Titania McGrath.
Good luck with it.
Thank you.
Good luck with your tour, and good luck with Edinburgh.
Thanks.
Thanks very much. Thank you. Oh, hi there. If you want to find this podcast on Twitter, you probably already have. But if you haven't, it's at Scott Cupuro, ScottCapurro. It's the same address on Facebook, where I'll hopefully be downloading this podcast, and all over social media. So take care and see you next week. Thanks. Bye.